Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Road to Recovery group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Wayne and I'm an alcoholic. It now gives me great pleasure to introduce our final speaker, Steve W. from the Pacific Group.
Good afternoon here, or good evening there. My name is Steve and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Steve.
First off, I want to thank you for inviting me over to the UK today. And the host knows exactly how I like my coffee. Thank you. Made me a nice cup of coffee for the meeting. But I also want to thank Caroline, Alessandra, and Chris for very great AA talks. You know, your Road to Recovery group, Caroline mentioned strict and structure. And it kind of reminds me of a group that I kind of attend called the Pacific Group. Because we talk about the structure, and I'll give you some stats. Most of my stats. I have a sobriety date. It's July 23rd, 1986. I have a home group, as he said, the Pacific Group. And I have a sponsor. His name is Clancy I, up in the sky. Clancy, I'm listening. And so that part about strict and structure, I kind of understand. You may not know it, but Clancy has a tendency to be a little strict and loud when sponsoring people. But I needed somebody louder than my head. And I've had Clancy for the past 25 years, and I'm very grateful for that. If you're new, welcome. You're going to get what you paid for, and it's free, so you may not get much, but you got me right now. So that's what you got to deal with, and I'm very grateful for Zoom, because if I had to go 3 minutes without a meeting, without talking to fellow alcoholics, that would not be a good thing. Because then the committee starts rolling and I'd get a little bit crazy. I'd get a little bit angst. And it may not look like a drink looks good at first, but my character defects will start to come out. I may get short with my children, who are actually adults today, but or people that work with me or different things or take bad actions. So I'm grateful for Zoom. I don't know, you know. Thank God for modern technology. And this is kind of like one alcoholic talking to another, like Bill and Bob, but we're just doing it on video screen. So we're kind of got the theme of AA going on. To let you know, I'm CIA, Catholic, Irish, and alcoholic. And I grew up in an alcoholic household. It does not make me an alcoholic. However, I saw alcoholism from the very beginning in my family. My dad was a practicing alcoholic and, you know, if you've ever grown up in an alcoholic home, you know, I said I'd never become one because I watched my dad. He was an amazing man when he was sober. Very good at what he did. We were lucky. We were kind of the upper middle class where we got to do stuff. And, you know, he was just a great guy. But when he drank, he was unpredictable. It could be a mellow night. He could just come home and have dinner. He could, or there could be a fight, there could be broken doors, there could be the police. He just didn't know. And that was alcohol. So, you know, I didn't start drinking until, you know, an old age in our home group. My first drunk, I was probably about 9 or 10 years old. I mean, in my home group, we got kids 12 years old with 14 years of sobriety. I can't quite figure it out, but, you know, the kids are getting sober younger and younger these days. But, you know, my first drunk, actually, you know, I drank before that. You know, my dad would say, hey, Steve, make me a scotch and soda. I'd make him a scotch and soda, roll over, take a little sip on it. Oh, God, I'm never going to drink that stuff. Oh, it tastes awful. But one day, you know, I was with my dad and we were in some hick town and he wanted to kind of teach me about drinking. And he got me a few shots of whiskey and a cheap dollar cigar. And I drank. And I smoked and I puked and I love it. An alcoholic was born the day alcohol crossed my lips. Now, as a little kid, you can't be it. You know, alcohol was difficult. But I said there was fear that I had growing up. My dad had fear. My dad's fear was running out of alcohol. So we bypassed the market. We bypassed the liquor store. My dad would have one of these big old box trucks, a distributing company, roll up to our house. And we'd get 50 to 60 cases of booze at a time. and we'd take it down into our basement and they would load it down there. So I'd just run down to the basement, rip off a bottle of Smirnoff, take it up to my bedroom, put in a little plastic container, go up to the local 31 flavors, get a Moa Moa punch, pour vodka in, ride my tricycle around the neighborhood drunk. I was that little kid that started drinking at a young age. I was an altar boy. So Monsignor, I was ripping off, you know, wine from him. I mean, I was a happy little boy. What happened was I've got a couple older brothers and an older sister. And one of my older brothers had this tackle box full of outside issues that get us into the meetings much quicker. And so I took some of those outside issues and I thought I'd deal some drugs. And I rolled up to the little Catholic grammar school and tried to deal. I'm not a good dealer. I got busted the first day out. So sister got upset. Sister calls Monsignor. Monsignor calls my dad. I get in trouble. And, you know, my dad puts a new altar at the local church, you know, and kind of helps smooth things away. And it kind of just went under the carpet, so to speak. And I went off to a little Jesuit high school in my neighborhood. And the Jesuits teach you how to type your freshman year in high school. So I learned how to type and I was actually a really good typist. So my dad said, well, maybe we'll have you come down and you can make some money and type for me. My dad was a doctor and I was going to transcribe medical cases. So I went down to his office and I was looking for some typing paper and I found in his bottom desk drawer these 3 2.2-ounce jars of pharmaceutical cocaine. We have our big book. I had mine. It was a PDR, physician's desk reference. So I reached in his bottom drawer. I made a little line like this and I began to type. And I was a hell of a typist. I was fast. I was quick. I was reliable. I joined the track team, the volleyball team. I became a cheerleader at the high school. I mean, this stuff was going great. My dad, an amazing man. I got booze and I got drugs from him, and I'm having a great childhood. You know, I turned 16. My dad got me a car, and I got a job as a liquor store delivery boy because, you know, I have a career path, you know, and so I'm, you know, delivering booze, ripping off the liquor store, and I get my first drunk driving at almost like 16 in a day. And I remember getting arrested for a drunk driving, and we went to court, and I got sentenced to 3 AA meetings. I like to call it like a fate worse than death, you know, 16, 3 AA meetings. And I showed up into this Alano club, and you guys look good. I mean, for a Zoom meeting, I don't see anybody in bed with their t-shirt on and their wife beater smoking a vapor or something. I mean, you got a good Zoom looking meeting. The meeting I went to at this Solano club, these guys all looked like they needed a drink. They all looked like they just got out of prison. And some dude was doing what I'm doing, not on Zoom, but he was at the podium. I screwed up. The newcomers are supposed to sit in the back. I accidentally sat up in the front. He goes, I used to take people like you and slit their throats for the money in their pockets so I can get a drink. No, I don't know about you, but that's a turnout for Alcoholics Anonymous. I was like, whoa, where the hell am I? You know, these people are messed up. So I went to another meeting, and I live in Los Angeles, and there's this neighborhood called West Hollywood. And I went into West Hollywood. I went to Friday night meeting. And the Friday night meeting, it didn't say men's stag, but it appeared to be. And all of these men were kind of gliding up to me and going, hey, how are you? You know, do you want one? We got to go. Not tonight. You know, kind of got less than a year. Leave me alone. You know, but I was totally turned off to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm like, this sucks. Next meeting, I went to a little place in my neighborhood and I ran into a friend of mine's mom. And I thought, I'm screwed for life. Every mother in the neighborhood's going to know I've already been to AA. So I was turned off and I didn't get another 502 for at least like 6 months. And, you know, then it's a 90-day treatment program where you got to go to like night school and learn how to drink and drive. And you do a few more meetings. But I don't want to get sober, you know, so I'm not taking it serious. I just do my 90-day program. And, you know, what happened was that year, my dearest friend, she died of, they were traveling up to the mountains and they were drunk driving, car crashed and she was killed. And it was directly related to alcohol. That summer, we were over in Hawaii and we're supposed to have this family vacation. And my dad went over there and he just went on a bender And so he and I got in a huge argument, and I left Hawaii and came back to the mainland. And he continued this bender. And when he left Hawaii, he went straight into the hospital. And he was in there for quite some time. And I was up north checking out a Jesuit university. And while I was up there on a Saturday night, I got a phone call from my mom. They tracked me down at a party somehow. And they told me my dad died. He got checked himself out of the hospital. He went home, had dinner with my family, and he went upstairs and died. And I came home, and first thing I did is I went by my dad's office to see if the drugs were there. They were gone. And, you know, already alcohol and drugs start changing who I am. Somehow I actually graduated from that high school, and my mom, my brother-in-law, and sister went out to celebrate the local Irish pub in LA called Tom Bergen's. And coming back to our neighborhood, my brother-in-law was drunk, crashed the car, killed my sister, and left my mom handicapped. Alcohol starts changing who I am. Because, you know, I wasn't drinking for fun anymore. Now I'm drinking just to survive and shut off the mind. You know, what happened after that is, you know, some weird things happened. And my brother-in-law ended up marrying my sister's best friend. And on the honeymoon, crashed a car and killed himself while she was at the hotel or something. Alcohol keeps ripping people out of my life. You know, I get another 502, and it's like a 6 month or year program, get another one. And I'm up north, and my mom says, you've got to get sober. I'm just not doing this. And I found a place in 10 days and a couple weekend follow-ups that can cure you of alcoholism. It's called Schick Shadel. Has anybody seen Clockwork Orange? If you have, this guy took that program and made it into a treatment program. I went into a private little bar just by myself, and I met some woman. I think she said, spoke German, said Heil. She shot me up with some medicine in my backside called an emetic. And I was in a private bar with mirrors and bottles. And the day before, they asked me what they liked to drink. And they'd fill these water glass fulls of like tequila or Tanqueray, scotch, or a little warm water, and said, start drinking. So I get the first one down, and I'm thinking this is a great way to get sober. And I'm in the middle of the second drink, and I'm going, something bad is about to happen. You know, when we're about to throw up, we get that kind of watery feeling in the back of our mouth, little beads of sweat coming down. All of a sudden, I'm projectile puking. She pulls this damn salad bowl thing around. I'm puking, and she's yelling, Heil, Ganav. I don't know what she's yelling, but I'm just puking and drinking and puking and drinking and puking and drinking and puking and drinking. We do this for 45 minutes. I think I'm going to die. I really do, you know? And then they take me to a private little hospital room, turn out all the lights, soak rags of alcohol all around my head, put it there, turn out all the lights, put it on the little, you know, TV table type thing, all the bottles, and play a tape called Joe's Head, The Evils of Alcohol. And, you know, then she slips me a little Mickey that I think is going to get me well. Now I'm going out of both ends. This is how I'm supposed to get sober. I was not very happy. I didn't read the fine print. And then, so the next day, this other lady comes in and puts an IV in my arm, Florence, and she shoots it with sodium pentothal and wants to figure out the real reason why I drank. Sodium pentothal is a crucial. I'm like, it actually kind of felt good, the sodium pentothal. So I thought, well, I can still handle, you know, Olga or whatever her name was, if Florence keeps coming back. But I quit drinking. I could not handle it. It worked. It was that Clockwork Orange, you know, and I used a lot of drugs, but I quit drinking, you know, because they said I wasn't there for drugs. I was there for alcohol, but the drugs were killing me. And finally, I had to become an alcoholic again. And so I worked on it and puked and worked on it. Finally, I got one down. That's when Long Island Iced Teas came out. And I got drunk one night on Long Island Iced Teas, and I did another drunk driving, felony drunk driving hit and run. And they busted me. And, you know, they got the right guy. So before I went to court, I went into that treatment program at that puking place. And now they got a puking, snorting, smoking program. It's a little bit longer. But I went in there at the end of it, supposed to be 14 days. I was there for 19. The extra 5 days while I was there, they said at the end, they decided I was crazy. And so they committed me to a mental institution. So I was a little bummed about that. And I found one in the state of Hawaii And I went over there and I went in November, you know, I sent all the little moccasins and ashtrays and stuff home for Christmas. And around February, they finally let me out of that mental hospital because I told them I was an alcoholic. And I showed up at a place called Ohio Street, which is in West Los Angeles. It's a little clubhouse. I showed up, and at the door, there was a guy named Dino Fenenos, this Mexican Lebanese, you know, dressed sharp, a lot like Matthew over there, who's got the vest on and the suit looking sharp, and Wayne. This guy was standing at the door looking like, oh, perfect, you know. He said, I'm going to be your sponsor. I go, what the hell? I want to get a court card signed before I go to the judge anyways. So Dino became my sponsor. And in the Pacific Group, we believe in that strict and structure, as Caroline talked about. So he said, we're going to go to the yard, and that's Clancy's backyard. We're going to do watches. Watches is when a person turns 1 year of sobriety. That night, we all sit and watch them turn 1 year, so, you know, wish them a happy birthday. And then we all go home at some restaurant that we meet. We're going to do all this stuff. I said, what the hell? I'll do it all. You know, I did everything he asked, but quit drinking. But other than that, I did everything that AA asked me to do. And eventually on July 23rd, he showed up and I was drunk and loaded the night before. He took me to our Wednesday night meeting and you loved me. I was torn up that night. And because of that, I have a sobriety date. While Dino did this, I have more friends sober today. He was dying of AIDS. He was a gay man and, you know, never let that slow him down from carrying the message. I joke about that meeting in West Hollywood, but my God, Dino saved my life. He taught me more about what it is to be a man than any other man that I know at that time. And I finally got sober. I started to do what we do around here. You know, I'm the poster child for what not to do in AA. By now, I actually had 6 502s. I got a couple more since it's only 25 minutes. I've given you a shorter version. I got sentenced to prison. I was bummed. I went down there. They fingerprinted me twice, once in, once out. I'm going, why that? God was looking after me. He said, listen, you're not going to make it here. And so what I did is I cleaned up public highways and bathrooms for my first year of sobriety. And that's what I did instead of jail time. I met some girl. She had negative 30 days of sobriety. She was around the group, apparently our group, for many, many years. And one night she told me, you know, like, don't worry, but I think I'm pregnant. When you're new, you got your own orange vest. Don't worry, I think I'm pregnant. It's just not a good sentence. It's like a compound sentence that doesn't go, I don't know, just not good. So I'm like, no. And she goes, yes. And I'm going, no. And so, you know, I wasn't too happy about that. And some girl I met in drunk driving school, like a year and a half earlier, I gave her my card saying, if you ever want to get sober, kid, give me a call. And she actually called me. And so, you know, I brought her over to the meeting, this little Latina girl, and she started to get sober. And I don't know how, someday we became engaged while this other girl was carrying my baby. But thank God I went to get a marriage license. Brenda was already married, but she said she forgot. She must have done it in a blackout or something. So it took years. She had some famous, you know, jazz musician, ex-husband, I guess she married, to get him into the country. She said she didn't remember, but, you know, God looked out for me. And all of a sudden, this other woman has, you know, my son, and we do some tissue typing, and we find out that Taylor might be my son. You know, it's like 99.32% chance. I've got a very rare blood type, AB negative. So all of a sudden I got this thing, you know, and I don't know what to do with them, you know, and I get my first 2-hour visitation. And what I do is I take them to Clancy's backyard. You know, I don't know, throw them, go long or what I do. And so I take them to the yard and the men and women of Alcoholics Anonymous taught me how to be a father. I had my sponsor at that time. We went, you know, we did the court thing. There's this thing called child support. There's like a little bit of a spread where you could pay this or that. Unfortunately, my sponsor is with me. And so there's a low end and a high end. My sponsor spoke out. He's paying the high end, you know, to the judge. I'm like, what? You know, boom, I'm paying the high end. You know, thank God for AA. So, you know, now I'm making these child supports. I got this little boy and Brenda and I, eventually she gets divorced. Then we get married. And, you know, things start happening. Dino passed and I got a couple other different sponsor. And then I had a guy named Clint Hodges, if you know him. He used to speak a lot, very much, you know, about the steps. And I had Clint for a while, and Brenda and I are married, and we had our first little boy, Brendan. And, you know, I have a couple clinics I had some businesses. I had stuff. I had house. I had cars. I had boats. I had a lot of stuff. And around 8 years of sobriety, I'm working with steps with Clint, and I'm taking some, you know, I'm running the program. I'm not letting God run it anymore. And I made some bad business decisions, and I almost overnight, I lost everything. I remember coming home and telling Brenda at the time, I go, "Hey, honey, I got to let you know we got to move. I'm having some financial difficulties," because I'm not really telling her how bad it is. She goes, "When?" I go, "How about Saturday, you know?" And so we moved, and we moved back into my mother's home, my mother's handicap. And we were able to let my other brother and his wife not take care of my mom anymore. And we moved back there. And, you know, Brenda and I've had problems on and off in our relationship. And Brenda shared with me she was pregnant. And I'm going, "That's great." And so I went to our Wednesday night meeting, and two guys gave me a job working for them as their assistant, paying a couple $100 a week. But 8 years, I lost everything, car, boat, house, everything. And I showed up at my home group, and you loved me, and you gave me a job for $200 a week. And you know what? That's the best thing that ever happened to me. Because I also found out I can lose everything, and if I don't take a drink, I'll be okay. You know, and I was. And, you know, that job I got at 8 years sobriety, 25 years later, I'm still doing. I got Clancy as my sponsor, and I got very active, and I am very active in AA. I know you all, Alessandro, you talked about service and other things like that. You know, I'm blessed. You know, I Clancy and I have a dear relationship. I'm on the board of directors of the Midnight Mission, where Clancy works. So while Clancy's in the office down there, I'm his boss. But as soon as he leaves those doors, he becomes mine and reminds me very quickly. And so, you know, but I'm on the front lines of alcoholism. I get to go down there, and I do it for fun and for free. I have another job that pays my bills, you know, and I get to see alcoholism, active alcoholism every day. And I get to be grateful, you know, and I'm ever so blessed. I found my purpose in AA. My purpose is to help another alcoholic. I didn't know what it was, you know. When I came to AA, all I wanted to do is stay out of prison. I really did. I didn't give it crap about anything else but staying out of prison. And you know, today I get to sponsor a lot of guys. I saw one here, one of my sponsees, Dave Wilson. Broke your anonymity, too bad. But you know, Dave, and he, you know, he set up instantaneous, as soon as all this happened, he's got 21 Zoom meetings in LA, PG Zoom or ZoomPG.com. You know, we have meetings 6:30 in the morning, 1 o'clock, 7:30. Dave, just like that, was a man of action. And we have all these great meetings every single day so that we can have a place to go. You know, and I go into these meetings and there's all these new guys. You know, it's amazing. I talked about that little boy, Taylor, his mom. I've been able to continually help. You know, 33 years later, I still help. She's sober finally, which is great. That little boy, Taylor, I remember about maybe... see, 32, probably about 8 years ago, we were on the top of the Empire State Building. We were back there checking out law schools for him. And we're in D.C. actually. And I, you know, I'm a little drama queen. So we're on the top of this thing. And I thought, "Son, do you want to know what happened with your mom and I?" And I'm ready to get, you know, like do that ninth step amends and all that. He just looks at me and goes, "Nope. All I know is you've been there." And it's true. I've been there because of Alcoholics Anonymous. That man, Dino, I talked about, he would give me a hug and tell me, "I love you." And he said, "I had to do a prayer because I didn't like Steve. God, don't let anything happen to this beautiful person you created today." See, in my family still today, my mom's alive. She's 95 and not well. But the most I've ever gotten from my mom is a Hallmark card saying, "Love, Mother." We don't kiss. We don't hug. We don't do anything. Dino taught me how to be a parent. My kids get hugs and kisses, and they know I love them, and they know where I'm at. My mom knows she's okay. She has nothing to worry about. I get to sponsor men like Dave and others, and I get to have a sense of purpose in life. I should be in prison, a mental hospital, or dead. But because of Alcoholics Anonymous, I have an amazing life. And because of my sponsor, Clancy, who I love very much, and he sends his best to you all, I am sober in my right mind and grateful to be here. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. That was great.